Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
Hello and aloha. It is Tuesday, May 22nd. No, I am not Matt Harmon. I am Scott Pianowski between the hedges filling in for our beloved, it says beloved in the script. I'm going to say esteemed host, but he's beloved too. Matt Harmon currently making the cross-country move to Virginia. I'm Pianow. I'm with Dalton Del Don, and we're going to talk the first round of the 2023 fantasy football draft. Never too early. The Yahoo crew got together, did a first round, 12 picks. In a standard snake draft. And we're going to go over these picks. We're going to say what we like, what we don't like, what we might have done differently. My dog's barking. Dalton Del Don, how you doing?
Doing well, P&L. It's been a while since we've done a pod together, so looking forward to it. Let's get to this mock draft.
Yeah, let's do it. So the people who drafted, Matt Harmon had the 1 and 2 picks. Dan Titus had the 3 and 4 picks. I had the 5 and 6 picks. Dalton had 7 and 8. Andy Behrens, 9 and 10. And Maurice Castillo, esteemed editorial chief, had the 11 and 12 picks. So we pick in tandem. Matt's not here to defend himself. We give him the first two picks. It's just, you know, unfair. And Dalton, it seems like it's going to be Justin Jefferson and Christian McCaffrey going 1-2 in a lot of different leagues. Harmon decided to go Jefferson 1 and CMC 2. I don't see a pound the table first overall pick, but these would be my first two guys. I think a lot of people agree with that. How are you viewing the top two picks in a fantasy draft?
Certainly have no issue here. I think Ja'Marr Chase has an argument. I'll even argue for Cooper Kupp later in full PPR, but certainly no argument against Justin Jefferson, 23 years old. He did end the last year with 3 kind of dud games, but I mean, he's still set up for such a big season. One thing to note is when Justin Jefferson played on grass last year, he averaged 64 yards a game. On turf, it jumped to 124, and they are scheduled for only 1 outdoor game the final 2.5 months. So if there's any concern to there, now he might smash in your fantasy playoffs this year when he really let fantasy managers down last year. So yeah, Jefferson's awesome. No Adam Thielen, who ran the second most routes among all receivers last year. That's being replaced by a rookie in Addison. So, and maybe no even Dalvin Cook here. So yeah, Jefferson, strongest argument as anyone to go number one.
Yeah, Dalvin Cook, somebody I don't want to draft this year. Just to let Matt Harmon defend himself, we'll give you the reasoning he provided for these picks. Jefferson, he said, it's his time in the sun at number one overall. Jefferson is an elite talent playing in an offense that moves him all around to get him to favorable spots. He can have a 20-touchdown season at some point. A little bit nervous. When I take a receiver first overall, I'd like him to have a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins. We've always talked about Kirk Cousins like a better than average quarterback, maybe somebody you can go to the playoffs with. He's never going to be an MVP candidate. He's in his mid-30s now, no mobility in a league where quarterbacks with mobility is becoming almost a mandate these days. And you see a lot of guys coming in. You know, next year, Caleb Williams is just about a perfect quarterback prospect. Does the specter of Cousins on the back nine make you nervous about drafting Jefferson?
I am surprised his YPA dropped to 7.1 with the new coaching staff last year. I expected a leap, not a regression there. But you love the durability. He's always there. He never rushes for any touchdowns himself, assuming he's not totally washed. And I don't think that's the case. I even expect maybe a bounce back in efficiency this year. But you love the 643 pass attempts indoors, and the guy's durable. So actually, I would consider Cousins actually a positive for Jefferson.
And maybe if Cook doesn't stay, I think Madison's an okay player, but certainly not an elite player. Who knows? Maybe they'll kick the tires on one of the free agents who's available, Zeke Elliott maybe, but perhaps the volume of the passing offense will go up. And I like what you mentioned about Cousins. The fact that he doesn't run, which is a knock, means he's very likely. You can just put 17 games down or 16 if they don't play the final week, whatever it is. You would think he's as safe as anybody to play a full schedule. Matt's reasoning for Christian McCaffrey, not that you need a lot of it, but we require everybody to write a blurb. This is what he wrote. Kicked myself a little bit after this. We're not going Chase. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase. Of course, we know Matt is the maestro of all things wide receiver analysis. However, this is Matt speaking. Fully believe McCaffrey has a unique ceiling and floor combo and is a difference maker at the RB slot. Dalton, we know you're a big 49er fan. We know we like Kyle Shanahan offenses. We like running backs in Kyle Shanahan offenses. So I think it's pretty easy to stump for CMC, but I'll give you the floor.
Yeah, so one concern with McCaffrey is he did have pretty significant splits with and without Elijah Mitchell after getting traded to the 49ers. Fantasy points per game, 16.7 versus 24.9. This is similar split in rushing attempt share and even in the red zone area. But Elijah Mitchell has been one of the most injury-prone players in all of football, and McCaffrey's awesome, and he's going to get all the touches he can handle in a system that just produces such efficiency. You know, yards per play, they're perennially top three, and now they have quarterback depth. So the concern with McCaffrey is, can he stay healthy? Obviously, he did last year, so there's no pushback. It's a universal top five pick this year.
I love how you say quarterback depth, which is another way of saying we have no idea if Trey Lance or Sam Darnold or Brock Purdy is their opening day starter. Do you have a lean? Are you in your best ball draft? Are you drafting a 49ers quarterback?
Well, I mean, I keep the Trey Lance art behind me and as my Twitter avatar, so I'm all in at this point with Lance. But Purdy is the presumptive starter after he basically did not lose a football game, that he stayed healthy last year. The coaching staff loves him. He was just so accurate on those intermediary passes. It's such a requirement in the Shanahan system. But there's some Trey Lance hype here. The Mahomes quarterback coach Christensen worked with him, and supposedly it took a few days, but really corrected some throwing issues that stemmed from a finger injury he dealt with as a rookie. So I don't know if that's just propaganda to, you know, maybe he's still a trade candidate, but I don't know. I know that usually the adage is if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one. But in this case, it's Shanahan. You know, we saw Garoppolo be among the league leaders in yards per attempt for the last few years, and I don't think he's very good. So I think the depth here with Darnold flashing last year too, and Lance with all the physical tools that, you know, had Shanahan trade an entire 3 years of draft picks to move up to get him. I think that's a good thing for McCaffrey's aspect, having three possibilities of just competency there.
It's just so crazy that Lance played so little his final college season, and he's hardly played into NFL seasons. So we have to go back 4 years, substandard college opposition. We just have no idea if Trey Lance is good. Let me
close 420 the pass attempts, 420 pass attempts since 2017, since high school.
That's,
I mean, Tom Brady threw more in his age 45 season. It's crazy.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay volume, man. Well, now they have Baker Mayfield, so Tampa Bay should be a blast. One final thought on McCaffrey. So he has two injury ruined seasons before last year, and then he was healthy last year, and a lot of people who were pro McCaffrey were just, you know, laughing and, you know, dancing and victory lapping about, oh, you know, Christian McCaffrey's injury prone. So silly that people bake that into his cost. Every running back is injury prone in the sense that, you know, these guys take so many hits. To keep McCaffrey healthy, who's an undersized running back anyway, you obviously need to get him involved in the passing game, get him tackled by the lighter players on the field. He's getting into the middle of his career, maybe even on the back nine. How do we reconcile how much of a health risk is McCaffrey or any running back? How do we factor that in where you would think guys like Jefferson, guys like Chase, you ostensibly project them for a full season? I don't think we project running backs for full seasons. Just give me a thought about Christian McCaffrey injury risk, or it's just, well, he's a running back. You just have to kind of whistle through the graveyard.
Jonathan Taylor had never missed a practice dating back to high school before last year. I personally look, I do take it all into account. The best injury predictor is injury history, but I consider age more so at the position. And he just came off a fully healthy season. He's still 26 years old. So I'm not considering him that much of a bigger injury risk than basically every single running back in the league.
So let's pivot to the Dan Titus picks, picks 103 and 104. He took Jamar Chase at 103. And I think there's going to be, I mentioned McCaffrey and Jefferson will go 1-2 in a lot of leagues. I think a lot of these leagues will start off with Chase in that top three as well. The tightest reasoning, incoming third-year breakout, Chase went for over 1,000 yards with 9 touchdowns in only 12 games last season. He's a target hog, an explosive offense, and all signs point to him having a career year. I like that Dan mentioned the third-year breakout because, you know, we've been around long enough that we remember when it's like, ignore rookie receivers, ignore second-year receivers, come knocking in year three. That's when things spike. Now, the fact that these guys can be impact players right away doesn't mean that they can't get better in year three. And unlike Jefferson, you know, we talked about Cousins. He's kind of, you know, there's some good things about Cousins. There are some less than good things about Cousins. I don't know anybody who doesn't love Joe Burrow. Obviously, him and Chase have run a million reps together. They played together at LSU. I'm going to rank Jefferson over Chase, but I don't think it would be crazy if somebody decided, they pounded the table, said, no, Jamar Chase is number one receiver on my board.
Yeah, I keep going back and forth. Chase actually is my number one right now. I did get the first pick in a PPR league about a month ago, and I went with Chase. He's the NFL's leader in yards per route run against man coverage since entering the league. Last year, he saw just one fewer target than he did the previous year. That's 162 targets in six fewer games. Yes, it had something to do with T. Higgins' injury, but he's tied to Joe Burrow, who might be the best passer in the league. I would have Mahomes or him, one of the... Probably, yeah. I think Burrow is the second most valuable commodity in the NFL. And Chase, I mean, it's all the targets. Love him. Yeah, what's not to like about Jamar Chase? He could have one of those historical seasons. But yes, T. Higgins is there. And if he remains healthy, that's, I guess, the counter you could say is if there's another, you know, kind of alpha 1A there.
That's a feature to me, though, not a bug. Because Chase has, I think, the perfect setup. But he's clearly the number one target. Higgins at least will keep teams away from maybe, you know, targeting Chase off the bus, although he will get a lot of the special treatment. They don't have a major factor at tight end. I've stopped believing in the Irv Smith breakout. Maybe it will happen, reunited with Burrow. And this running game, which really didn't look great at times last year. I mean, I don't know what the status is of Joe Mixon between his career trajectory and some of his off the field stuff. I would not be surprised if the Bengals just said, screw it. We're going to throw the ball 45 times a game. And it's going to be mostly the Chase and Higgins show. It's such a narrow tree. Here's the bottom line. This is how I approach things. Because it's like poker players talk about frequencies where you don't do something 100% of the time. You may, in a certain hand situation, you may raise 60% of the time, 65% of the time, 70% of the time, so you're hard to play against. I'm going to go into draft season. I have to come out of my drafts with some Jamar Chase. He won't be on all my teams. You know, you have the ninth pick, you'll never get him. Even in the salary cap drafts, I won't go out and make sure I get him in every league. I'm going to play to the room's personality to some degree, but Dalton, I am not prepared to go into week one of the NFL season and not have Jamar Chase exposure. He has to be on some of my teams. And what that means, and I know this may not be satisfying for the listener to hear, but I may take Jefferson over Chase in one draft and then maybe take Jason Jefferson in a different draft because I just want to have some diversity and some exposure to both of these elite talents.
Yeah, who knows what happens with Joe Mixon here. Chase, 22 touchdowns over 29 regular season games since entering the league. He was playing with this hip injury last year, too. He wasn't even 100%. So, yeah, man, year three, fully healthy. And remember, he missed that final year in college, too. So, I mean, this could be a truly special season for Chase.
So then Titus ruined my hopes at picks 5 and 6 because I was eyeing Jonathan Taylor. But Jonathan Taylor goes to Titus at pick 104. This is Dan Titus's rationale. Week 4 ankle injury derailed a promising third season for Taylor, but the former rushing champ comes into the 23 season fully healthy with a new head coach who runs the ball incessantly. I'm here for JT's bounce back campaign. I feel better about taking him over Austin Eckler with his contract situation still in limbo. And that was written before Austin Eckler got his deal, I guess, smoothed over. They threw some extra incentives into it. Eckler will play for the Chargers this year. Obviously, we're big Austin Eckler fans at Yahoo. He's been part of our world. Really, really just a great dude. But Jonathan Taylor, as you said, had missed a practice until last year. He was on all the magazine covers. He was kind of the slam dunk 101 pick last year. I want Jonathan Taylor this year. A 104 might be an aggressive move to take him, but I can't say Dan Titus is wrong here. I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, he underwent ankle surgery, plans to be 100%. I have Jonathan Taylor as my number two ranked back, so no argument here. He's one season removed from 2,300 yards, 20 touchdowns. Anthony Richardson, on one hand, yes, he may steal some touchdowns. I don't know, where do you stand on that? I do consider the Colts offense definitely a question mark, but at the same time, there's an argument that he just opens up the field for his running backs. Richardson did in college, big, big time. Shane Steichen, a massive upgrade there for the Colts as well. So I don't know. I'm in on Taylor. I'm totally okay with him going top five here.
Steichen's an interesting guy here because I'm a Steichen believer. I think he was a smart hire. I think there's a chance he could be a home run pick, but you don't know. When you get these offensive gurus who come into their first head coaching job, you don't know if you're getting Sean McVay or Arthur Smith. I would have followed Arthur Smith into a burning building 2 or 3 years ago. I'm no longer doing that. I don't think I'd follow Arthur Smith into a non-burning building at this point. So I like Shane Steichen. I think he was the right hire. Still kind of a crazy organization with Irsay running the show in Indianapolis. But I think this team is a sleeping giant. Last year, I thought they were going to cruise to the AFC South title, which, of course, they didn't do. They're the most disappointing teams in football. But sometimes it's just a year later, right? I mean, look what's going on right now in the NBA and the NHL. I mean, the Florida Panthers were the best team in hockey a year ago. This year, as the 8th seed, they look like they're going to go to the NHL finals. And the Miami Heat needed to win the playoff series, the play-in game, to get into the NBA playoffs, but they were a juggernaut last year. Maybe it's just some of these things where it's a latent team. Things kind of come together a year later. I'm a believer in Steichen. He's certainly not a slam dunk. He's still an unknown quantity as somebody who runs a team. But I thought he did a lot of interesting things at Philadelphia, and they have pieces in Indianapolis. So bottom line is this. If you're going to go in or out on the Colts, I'm in. Anthony Richardson, I know he didn't play a lot in college. I know he's got a wide range of outcomes, but you can't look at his tape and not be excited.
And I like Gardner Minshew's presence there in case Richardson gets hurt running or it turns into whatever, he's not ready or whatever.
He's familiar with Steichen. Him and Steichen know each other too. So that really helps as well.
Yeah, it raises the floor for Taylor. You know, the backup there certainly wouldn't be a disaster if Minshew had to play.
So then we go to the P&L picks, 105, 106. A slot I was not in love with. I took Austin Eckler at the 105 pick. My rationale was bankable as a pass catcher and belongs in the first round no matter what happens to his goal line equity. I took Saquon Barkley. I really don't like these older running backs, but there I was with Barkley at 106. I said, getting near a dangerous mileage, but Brian Daboll and even Daniel Jones have this offense in the right, moving in the right direction, and Barkley looked like a bell cow last year. I'm not going to defend my picks. I've just defended them with a nice, simple tweet-length blurb. Dalton, did I do the right thing with Eckler? Did I do the right thing with Barkley? And interesting to note, you had the next two picks after me, so tell me how these picks look to you.
I faded Eckler last year, much to my severe detriment the last 2 years. He's just become an absolute monster in the red zone. So not only is he an amazing, amazing, awesome receiving back, it's not just the targets. He's awesome there. But his usage in the red zone has just made him a fantasy absolute monster. In fact, last year, his 15.3 expected touchdowns were the second most over the past 3 years. He's gone from a guy taken out at the goal line to a guy who's scored 25 rushing touchdowns the last 2 years after scoring one in 2020. So what a remarkable, that's also not counting the 13 receiving touchdowns Eckler's had. So, I mean, and he's going to stay in San Diego, it sounds like, with the incentives added to his contract. So it's hard to argue with this production, man. And you even did it in a half PPR. So I guess he loses a little bit value there, but not really because he counters it with all these touchdowns. So you just really have to reevaluate a guy 5'10", 200 pounds usage in that red area. And there's no one there on that roster as any competition at all, a threat to take that away, take that role away.
I like that you moved the team back to San Diego. I really wish they'd go back there. Well, would you
have taken that even this many years later? Wow.
Would you have taken Eckler at 105?
Well, man. So because I faded Eckler and Kelsey last year, I feel like I'm going to be stubborn and do it again and not try to go
down.
Back.
But
that's probably just my own bias and my own detriment. So again, I mean, Eckler's going to go this high in all drafts, and there's no reason he shouldn't coming off these massive production. So yeah, I certainly don't fault that pick. That's for sure.
Give me your thoughts on Barkley and the Giants. Brian Daboll was, again, we talked about these offensive coordinators getting head coaching jobs. You don't really know what you're going to get. Brian Daboll sure looked like a home run, got the Giants back into the playoffs. Got Daniel Jones looking like a competent NFL quarterback, and Barkley back healthy again. I mean, he didn't look like maybe the electric Barkley when he first came into the league, but I still think there's plenty of juice left with him. What do you think at Barkley at 106?
Yeah, the only guy I have above Eckler and Barkley is Bijan Robinson, which we'll talk about. And obviously that's a gamble drafting a rookie running back before someone who has 25 rushing touchdowns the last 2 years. So I was all over Barkley last year. It was definitely a success, although he didn't quite, you know, explode some of those games as people had hoped because he did stay healthy. But man, I'm a Daniel Jones believer. They added so many upgrades to the receiving core there. Barkley, assuming he does return to New York, he's awesome. He remains in his prime, and there's just the thinnest depth chart behind him. Matt Breida, Eric Gray, Gary Brightwell. I think Barkley is an excellent pick right there.
Just aren't that many bell cows. And one of my favorite roster construction themes is just to go with what I call the anchors away running back. Some people might call it the hero running back, which is get a hero RB, I guess, sounds a little bit more pithy. You get that one running back you can hang your hat on, and then you pound receiver or whatever the other positions you want to get. With me, it would be receiver. I'm not usually an early tight end guy, and I know that quarterbacks are going to go earlier. No quarterbacks went in this draft, but I feel like we're at a time where quarterbacks are going to start percolating into the second and third round. They're going to go earlier than they did last couple of years because people have seen how impactful they've been in fantasy. But for me, I'm going to be all about trying to get one running back I like and trying to get a really strong receiver room that I think is one of the better ones in my league. And with that, we'll pivot to your picks, 107 and 108. Your first pick was Cooper Kupp. This is your words talking in the article. Kupp averaged by far the most PPR points per game last season when on the field and should get all the targets in a depleted Rams offense. We just need Matthew Stafford to return healthy. You know, Kupp's kind of sneaky old. He was in college for a while. He's coming up on age 30 season. Had a couple of years that were wiped out by injury. I don't know what's left to Stafford. Kupp's one of those guys. This is going to sound wishy-washy as hell. I'm afraid to draft him, but I'm afraid he could beat me. Talk to me about Cooper Kupp at 107.
First of all, you're absolutely right about the quarterbacks. In early drafts, the ADP after round one is Mahomes 13, Allen 14, Hurts 15. So, wow. Yes, and I'm on board with that, too. I think those rushing quarterbacks now are worth early second round picks. Normally, I'm after the young guys. That's why I still will probably lean Chase and Jefferson. But, man, Kupp is the only game in town, indoors. Yes, we need Stafford to return healthy for sure for this to work. But 75 catches last year in essentially 8 games because he left that 9th one early. Kupp. He was easily leading in points per game in PPR leagues, even with that missing 3.5 quarters. So the touchdown, you know, 16 touchdowns a year before. So I get it. He's approaching 30, but it's not 33. And he's just, especially if you're in full PPR, I think there's an argument that he's the number one overall pick given his situation in LA where he's just, I mean, he's gonna surpass 200 targets if he stays healthy.
And I got to give it to McVay too, that he's able to scheme Kupp wide open where, when you think of, I thought Kupp was the MVP of the league 2 years ago, and you'd watch games, and you'd be like, why is Cooper Kupp open? Why is he this open when he's the one guy that can really hurt the opposition? And McVay is such a genius with the route combinations and with the rubs and with moving Kupp all over the formation. He really puts on a clinic the idea of, like, again, like you talked about Jefferson, about how they move him all over the formation. When a team has one overwhelming offensive player, you think, well, can't he be erased? You know, shouldn't the opposition just make sure that guy doesn't beat him? But McVay's so good at getting Kupp open and getting those, as Matt likes to talk about, those layup targets, those really easy completions. And he gets so many yards after the catch. I just wish Kupp was a little bit younger and wasn't coming off a major injury. And man, I just don't know what I'm getting from Stafford, man. He makes me nervous. He's taken a lot of hits and he played hurt last year. He didn't play particularly well. I don't know. Maybe I'm worried about something that I shouldn't be worried about, but Matthew Stafford, I'm petrified the draft right now.
Those are fair points. I feel bad. I took a call to the Chargers San Diego. Did you see Mark Davis taking a shot at them with the Thursday flex scheduling? The Raiders owner was saying that all three Chargers fans may have to, you know, reschedule their plans if they were planning on coming to Vegas. But sorry, LA.
Mark Davis is one to talk. When's the last time the Raiders have been relevant? I mean, I know they made the playoffs a couple of years ago, but you know, nice job with the John Gruden hire. That worked out really well. I don't know why Mark Davis is taking shots at anybody, man. I always have Charger optimism. I always feel like I bet on them to win the AFC or win the Super Bowl or something. That never happens. And isn't it crazy that the one Chargers team, I mean, they've had Dan Fouts, they've had Drew Brees, albeit before Brees really was Brees. They've had Philip Rivers, they have Herbert now. The one Chargers team that went to the Super Bowl was the Stan Humphries team. It just doesn't seem to make any sense to me, but I will take the Chargers being in the Super Bowl before the Raiders again.
No doubt.
Good luck with Josh McDaniels, too, by the way. Josh McDaniels and Jimmy Garoppolo. What could go wrong with that?
No question.
Let's get to the fun pick. So you said for Bijan Robinson, the electric rookie is set for 3-down work in a run-heavy offense with a loaded offensive line. Robinson has an argument to be ranked immediately as fantasy's top running back. Atlanta's schedule appears highly favorable, too. So, look. We're at a time where the running back position is being devalued. There's a lot of committees. Don't take a running back in the first round. But once, I don't know if it's a generation or once a decade, and maybe you go back to Barkley, maybe you go back to Adrian Peterson. Just once in a while, a running back comes around. It's like, well, this guy is different. The Falcons felt that way. They put two hands in the middle with all their chips. And now you get some fun pieces. I don't know if Ridder's any good, but I know Kyle Pitts is good. And I know Drake London is good. I know Bijan Robinson is good. And I think he may be the one player in the first round that you kind of have to spend some time thinking about him because he's going to go second, third, or fourth, maybe even first in some leagues. He may percolate towards the end of the first round in some other leagues. It's just hard. He's an unknown commodity. The quarterback's kind of hard to trust. Arthur Smith, we've seen he hasn't really gotten the most out of Pitts for two seasons. London was up and down last year, but they do want to be run heavy. I've talked a lot about Bijan Robinson. Why don't you talk about him?
Yeah, over the last 10 years, only three running backs, power five running backs in college have averaged more than 100 rushing yards and more than 25 receiving yards. They're Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, and Robinson. Yes, Desmond Ridder is the big question mark here. He could, you know, torpedo this whole thing here, but Atlanta otherwise is returning four offensive line starters from PFF's number one run blocking unit. They were the number one in first down run rate, number two in EPA per rush, number three in success rate. So it's a terrific system playing indoors, and a lot of that was with a bad quarterback last year. Mariota was unfunctionable at times. So you love the system. You love the path to touches right away. And again, the receiving ability from Robinson. Falcons, yes, strength of schedule is tricky, but you look at the Vegas projected win total. Boy, this the South has such a favorable schedule. The Falcons look like a cakewalk there. So I don't know, a lot of positives here, but obviously a risk drafting a rookie in the first round. But I love swinging for upside. So give me Robinson as a easy top 10 pick in fantasy drafts.
And all those stats you mentioned, all those efficiency metrics that graded well, was without an elite running back. They didn't have a Robinson on the roster last year. Now they do. What's the earliest you would consider taking Robinson?
Yeah, so on my overall board here, I got those the receivers, McCaffrey, and then Taylor. So I have Robinson actually sixth. But, I mean, obviously, Eckler right there, Tyreek Hill right there, Barkley right there. I think there's a good argument right there for the top nine, really. And then I think things start to get a little bit trickier.
Let's say you were in a draft with like your buddy Chris Liss and he wanted to take Robinson over Jonathan Taylor. Would you let him win that argument?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really high on Taylor. Like I said, I have Taylor as my number two back and Robinson my number three. But I think there's a gigantic tier here. Maybe you say McCaffrey is by himself. Fine. Then I think two through, I'm always all the way down to Ramondre Stevenson, even 12. If you wanted to go down to Henry, my number 11, I think that's one gigantic tier, frankly. And some of these guys like Jacobs, Etienne, Pollard, Breece Hall are going in round three. So that's actually where the gold mine is right now, is drafting these running backs that are falling to round three. Then in my opinion, are basically in tier 1A.
I thought when Robinson was drafted, he was going to be the final running back of this mock draft. He was, little spoiler, he was not the final running back of this mock draft. We'll get to that in a little bit. We're up to the Andy Barron segment of the program. Travis Kelce with pick 109. You take Tyreek Hill with pick 1010. The Kelce angle was, if you're looking for signs of decline with Kelce, you won't find him in his 2022 game log. He just delivered career highs in receptions, 110, receiving touchdowns, 12, and then gave us a stellar postseason. No other player provides a positional edge quite like Kelce. Into an age 34 season, you know, man, Kansas City's the rest of their pieces. They have Andy Reid, they have Mahomes, they have Kelce. Three people motoring towards the Hall of Fame. Kelce's already there. Andy Reid's already there. All Mahomes really needs to do is just stay healthy for a couple more seasons. And even if Mahomes just like retired tomorrow, I'd put him in the Hall of Fame anyway. But who else on this offense excites you? I just wonder, at what point do you have to have a third pitch? Because right now it's Mahomes and Kelce, and it's really a drop down.
And yeah, 34 years old, but like you said, there's no other receivers there that's going to demand targets or even a running back. Such good coaching. It's such an amazing situation for Kelce and the thinnest position. So it's hard to push back and give a counter here other than just age. And you want to be a year early than a year too, yep. You know, year too soon than a year too late. But boy, he won a lot of fantasy managers leagues last year. So what is the counter other than age? I mean, right? I mean, that's my only real counter here. I mean, he doesn't look nearly as explosive as he did at the previous earlier stages of his career, but it didn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, especially with all those cheap touchdowns inside the 5-yard line where he just flips it to him. So yeah, he's a fantasy gold mine and at a position that's so tough to fill. So I want to push back on Andy here, and I probably personally won't draft him, but I'll probably regret it again because he's in such a good situation.
Yeah, we're of the same mind there, where I see all the reasons why Kelce goes in the first round. I feel like it's binary. You're either a Kelce first round guy or you're not. I haven't been. Last year was the wrong year to play it that way, but the age makes me nervous. You say the only downside here is age. Well, a 34-year-old tight end makes me nervous. I'm not going to take Kelce probably in the first round, and I'm prepared to look, not only look really stupid, but prepared for Andy to say, oh, they gave you Travis Kelce in the first round. You should just, you know, hug everybody for doing that. You know, Andy will remind us, like last year he got Josh Jacobs right when a lot of people like me got him wrong. And then Andy reminded us of that like every week when Josh Jacobs was just dump trucking people. And Josh Jacobs, by the way, did not land in this first round either. Andy's 10th pick, 110, 10th overall pick in the first round, Tyreek Hill. Andy speaking. Hill somehow produced career highs in catches, 119, and receiving yards, 17-10. In his first season without Patrick Mahomes, he's ridiculous, cartoonishly fast, as explosive as any receiver in NFL history. I talked about the Chase setup, where it's really nice to have Higgins, but Chase is the alpha. Chase is the number one. Maybe the gap between Hill and Waddle is a little bit more narrow, but Hill, I still think, is the primary guy there. So it's a really good setup, but I just don't know what we can expect from Tua Tagovailoa. How many games does he play? I'm over the fact of worrying about how good he is, because I'm thinking he's good enough, and I like the coaching there. I like McDaniel as a coach. I certainly love that they have the two best receivers in football for my money, although I wouldn't mind if you went with the Bengals guys, but I see Hill as a first-round pick, but I'm still nervous about Tua. I just don't know what to project for him this year. And if he doesn't play, then it goes down to Mike White. That's a big problem.
What a monster Tyreek Hill is. I worried about him leaving Patrick Mahomes last year. He had the second most yards per route run in a single season over the last 15 years. Steve Smith in 2008, the only one better. Tyreek Hill finished as PPR's wide receiver 2 last year, despite a career-low touchdown rate, 5.9%. That was like half of what he had across six seasons with the Chiefs. So I love him. He's awesome. The question is, can Tua stay healthy? That is the key here. You brought it up, and that's massive here. Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle combined for 15 touchdown catches last year. They all came with Tua. They combined for 0 in six games in which Tua left early or missed. So that is the key here. Both those guys can be easy top 10, if not top 5, fantasy wideouts. Both of them, because it's a concentrated target tree, no running back there. So love this setup. And Tyreek Hill, the player, is clearly a Hall of Famer after leaving Mahomes and putting up an historical season in yards per out run.
Is there any way you'd consider a CeeDee Lamb here, a Stephon Diggs here, a Davante Adams here, an A.J. Brown here? Is that those guys enter the conversation?
Yeah, they do. CeeDee Lamb, Diggs, and Adams, I think, are probably in the similar. I don't know. You tell me. Do you put Hill in that tier, or do you put Hill in the tier with Jefferson, Kupp, and Chase? Because you look at those numbers last year, second in air yards. I mean, Hill has an argument to be in that tier, closer than he does the other. But obviously, these are just semantics.
The only guy I think I would consider over Hill would be Diggs, only because I just feel the floor. I'm such a floor drafter. Everybody in the first round has upside, but Diggs, I think, has a really high floor. With Lamb, maybe Dak Prescott's just okay. Maybe he's not great, and he's had some injury issues. A.J. Brown is a lot of competition for the ball there. Smith is going to get a lot of opportunity, and Dallas Goddard's an elite tight end, and Jalen Hurts is going to bogart a lot of the touchdowns from in close. They have talented running back room. So I know A.J. Brown was great his first. I wasn't sure what to expect from him right out of the box with the Eagles, and I looked really silly with it. Also, we have to see what they do without Steichen, right? I mean, when an offensive coordinator leaves, you don't know if everything will be seamless after that first season. So I think that's a reason to consider A.J. Brown is more of a second-round pick. I ultimately would take Hill. A lot of these guys are really interesting picks, though. And that's where I think things really get interesting. Maurice Castillo had the 11th pick, the 12th pick. He picks Nick Chubb at 111. I'm a gigantic Nick Chubb fan. In fact, when I didn't get him in the Fantasy Index salary cap draft, Andy Richardson, who was organizing that draft, said, I can't remember the last time you didn't have Nick Chubb. I'm a big Chubb guy, but he just feels like a second-round pick to me. This is Moe's reasoning. He said, I'm all in on a Kareem Hunt-less Chubb in 2023. The best pure runner in football should be even better in a full offseason alongside Deshaun Watson. Undeniably, Watson has to play better than he did last year. He just looks like a guy who hadn't played in two seasons. Chubb gets a little bit dinged because he's not a heavy pass catcher. He's one of those guys I think could catch the ball. They just don't use him that much in that role. Maybe with Hunt out of the picture, Chubb can get up to another 10 or 15 catches. Maybe I need to get over this. Maybe Chubb is a first-round player. I still think he's like an early to mid-second-round player. What say you about Nick Chubb at 111?
I'm on board here. Actually, do have him ranked ahead of Josh Jacobs, but most drafts will see Jacobs go right around here instead. But yeah, you remove Hunt's receiving. You add some of that to Chubb. I mean, Jerome Ford is the guy behind him now. So the other key here is, like we repeatedly go back to, is the quarterback situation. And is Deshaun Watson going to be more like the player he was before the suspension or more like it was last year. That'll definitely play a part here, as if Chubb is worth, you know, he has an upside to be the number one fantasy back without question now with an expanded receiving role. I mean, he's absolutely awesome. Averaging 5.2 yards per carry. I think it's the second highest in NFL history. You look at the leaders last year and the percentage of runs that went for 10 plus yards. He's the only one even remotely close to a workhorse. So yeah, he's putting up these massive numbers, and he's yet to I don't think he's surpassed 350 touch, reached 350 touches yet. So I'm actually on board here. Love the system, and Watson is the wild card here, though. But without Kareem Hunt, I have no pushback here for Chubb. It's a first round fantasy pick, especially this is actually we treated this as half PPR, so that really helps Nick Chubb here as mm-hmm. well.
I think I take Diggs at 11 and one of the other receivers at 12. Now, Mo does back up with Diggs at pick 112. His reasoning was consistent greatness. I'm not sure there's a massive ceiling with Diggs like some of the ones of his younger counterparts have, but few players have safer floors than he does. And again, yeah, he's saying the magic words to me. I love these players. I think all have upsides, but he's obviously tied to Josh Allen. He's the preferred target on this team. He's somebody who can beat all kinds of coverage. But I love the floor he has as well. I think Stephon Diggs belongs in the first round. He'll probably be in pick 11, pick 12 in a lot of leagues. Or maybe if you have that sandwich pick, you can take him pick 13 and say, ha-ha, I got Stephon Diggs in the second round. But to me, he's a bona fide first rounder. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I guess he did not report to OTAs on Tuesday, something to maybe pay attention to because he was so disgruntled the last time we saw him on the field, but probably nothing. And I do think he is safer, as we talked about these other receivers in this next tier. CeeDee Lamb had the big monster finish, but there's Brandon Cooks there now. Davante Adams did not go in the first round in this draft after just leading the league in air yards last year and putting up just, you know, monster numbers, 180 targets. But I can understand why not there with Jimmy Garoppolo and Adams already kind of questioning where the offense is going. That actually has disaster kind of bust written all over it. So, again, no pushback with Diggs here. My guy Gabe Davis proved to be wide receiver 2 at best, probably wide receiver 3. So certainly no added competition for targets here. Dalton Kincaid, you know, rookie tight end out of the slot. But Diggs should remain a target hog in 2023.
So let's talk about the best players who weren't drafted. You mentioned Adams. You mentioned Lamb. You mentioned a little bit earlier the quarterbacks. If you had pick 113, well, let's just say it was a 14-team league. Let's make it a 14-team league. You don't have anybody yet. I'm going to give you pick 113 and 114. Who would you take?
It would be Lamb and Adams, and for the reasons we mentioned. Lamb really did finish strong last year, became that dominant target hog without Amari Cooper there. Playing indoors. I know that team could just become boring with the new coaching style there. But then I'm turning to Hurts as my number one QB this year. The guy averaged 11 pass attempts in the second half last year. I think the volume is going to be there for him. I just love the combination of his setup and his rushing upside. And they kept that ability to push in those goal line scores. So I'm turning to him right then. Early second round, I'm looking at the quarterback position before once we get those elite running backs and wide receivers. And right away, about pick 14 is where I'm turning to the quarterback position.
If I'd pick 13 and 14, I would go Lamb and Adams too. I'd be willing with a partner to be talked out of one of those guys, maybe for A.J. Brown, although that's more of an Adams question for me. I have Lamb above both those guys, but I'd say, oh, great. I picked 13 and 14. I just built the best receiver room in the league, and hopefully I can get some running backs. I'll just have to ham and egg it at running back, but whatever. A lot of people, nobody's going to probably have two good running backs anyway. Let me ask you this about Hurts. Is it one of these things when we don't rank – I think I have Mahomes first. I'm not even sure if I do, but I'm pretty sure I do. In my mind, I do. When somebody ranks Mahomes not number one at quarterback, are we trying to fix something that isn't broken? I mean, when have you lost money on Patrick Mahomes? And the case with Hurts, as great as he was last year, don't some of the rushing touchdowns have to go back distributed to other guys? I mean, they don't really want to run him that aggressively for the next 5 years, do they? I mean, isn't that tempting fate a little bit too much? Hurts is incredible. And the skill talent there is incredible. And I would think that even with Steichen gone, there's enough in offensive intelligence there that I'm not really worried about that being a fall off. But I would like to think the Eagles are like, yeah, you know what? We're up 20 on Washington today. We're first and goal at the one. Do we really need our franchise quarterback taking a couple of hits at the goal line? No matter, I don't care how dynamic he is. I think they pull back from that a little bit. Maybe I'm wrong. There's just a gut feel on my part. Sometimes teams don't do that, but I think they've been a little bit reckless with Hurts, and I think they might reconsider that.
Hurts was second in the league in expected rushing touchdowns last year. And I don't see DeAndre Swift or Rashad Penny taking away too many. But that said, Hurts has ended the last three seasons with a leg injury, a lower body injury. So it would make sense for them to try to keep him healthier. But again, he was 32nd among qualifying quarterbacks in dropbacks per game in the second half last season. And he still put up all those fantasy stats. I mean, the defense is going to regress. He's going to have to throw the ball more in the second half. He has these absolute two superstars. Devontae Smith developed into a superstar last year. So love the setup and that rushing upside. I get it. Patrick Mahomes is the highest floor and the best real-life player maybe ever. I'm probably ready to argue that, but ever. The best football player ever. So I get that for sure. But fantasy terms? No, I don't know. I do actually like Hurts more than him. I'm not just trying to be different.
Where do you draw the line at the quarterback tier? Is it a big two with those two guys? Is it a big three and you put Josh Allen in there? Is it a big four with Joe Burrow? What's the line draw for you?
So it's a great question. I love Fields, man. I put him four. Okay. I just think the rushing is there. Yes. No, I think it's totally there. And I see him.
Four over Burrow, I take it. Allen three and Fields four?
Correct. Allen and Mahomes right there, and then Fields, and then Lamar Jackson and Burrow. I mean, Burrow's safer because of Jackson's injury.
Yeah, but look at
the setup
Jackson
there and the running right there. So, but yeah, I haven't really the tiers. I guess Hurts, Allen, and Mahomes because my number four is Fields, and he went in the fifth round in the mock draft we did together. So that's why I'm separating the tiers because if I can get my number four that much later, then giddy up there, sign me up for Fields or Lamar if he falls. But yeah, I love Hurts, Allen, and Mahomes as rock solid early second round picks this year, given the fantasy landscape. It's definitely changed throughout the last decade.
And I guess that's that group of six is kind of like a super six, right? Because after that, I mean, look, I love Justin Herbert, but I can't say his upside.
Yeah, yep. Lawrence.
They don't have the upside of those other six guys, I don't think.
Right. Agreed. Totally.
All right, man, this was fun. So we gave you a first round. We even gave you a peek into the second round. We gave you a look at the quarterback landscape. Hopefully a lot of stuff to think about. It's going to do it for our show today. Matt Harmon is back in the saddle next Thursday. He's going to host an exciting summer series during the month of June called Flip the Script. We will look at who will flip the script this season and be the surprise storylines of the year. Up first, who will be this year's Jaguars and determine the team that will shock the pundits and go worst to first in 2023. Dalton is with Matt on that program. It's going to be a very collectible must-listen-to episode. Until then, for Dalton, for producer Colin, I'm Scott. We are done. Program out.